All right, time to look through the window of baseball for Truitt and White, the professional builder's choice, and Marvin Windows and Doors. And we bring in our friend from the Chronicle, and that is Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, good morning.
Hey, Marty, how are you?
Good, very good. And, boy, six in a row. Who saw this one coming?
Yeah, that's it's pretty discouraging. I mean, I figured they'd comport themselves a little better, you know, going through Boston and New York. It's important stuff, you know. You want to show your best there, and they've actually shown their worst. So what are you going to do? It's interesting they switched Cueto and Samardzija without really telling anyone, just a lapse in communication. But, you know, it's a good thing Cueto's out there today. I mean, they need a win. There's very few times in July where you say you need a win, but they need one very soon.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, with all that went on, though, the Dodgers only picked up 2.5 games. And, you know, when you're still up by four, and I realize, you know, 66 to go and four could disappear in seven, you know, 6 days it could be gone. But, you know, things do change. You know, the pendulum does swing back, especially when you have pitching like this. And there's, you know, you don't want to really say the sky is falling right now, but they're not playing good baseball. That's the thing. They're making too many errors right now.
Yeah, I mean, the way the game ended last night, I mean, Crawford, this is definitely an error on Crawford, but, you know, Bevelt's got to bring that ball down.
Right.
That run can't score there. And who can figure that? You got a great shortstop and a good first baseman. That's just kind of how things are going now. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I thought Belt should have made that play. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't tell exactly, but I thought he should. Bumgarner last night, Bruce. You know, here was his setup in the big stadium in the Bronx, a lefty, the home of Whitey Ford and all the great ones, and Lefty Gomez and all these great pitchers. And here's a lefty at Yankee Stadium. I thought he did well. I thought, you know, he just wasn't as sharp. But, boy, that park is built for a left-handed pitcher, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I thought he was fine. I mean, Castro got him. That hurt. But, you know, after the early innings, he was tremendous, really. I think he'd, you know, he loves the big stage. And that, like you say, that in particular is a great park for lefties to pitch in. It's a little different for a right-hander. If a guy starts pulling the ball into that porch, it's almost cheating sometimes when there's a little wind current hitting out there too. But, yes, it was a big stage, and it just didn't happen for him because the Giants aren't hitting, and it's too bad.
They're talking about maybe releasing A-Rod. He'll be 41 next Wednesday. Didn't look particularly good last night, and is not having a big year. Think that's possible?
Well, it's possible. I mean, I don't know how much they owe him. Probably like $9 billion left, but something like that. But he's such a drag on the organization at this point. You know, you think about, you know, one of the great players in history. Really, his numbers are going to get him into the Hall of Fame. Maybe in 20 years when Bonds goes in, he'll go in too. But he hasn't been A-Rod for quite a while. And how long can you watch that? You know, it's kind of sad. And, you know, he's looking to, you know, get into – I think there was a time when he thought about breaking Bonds' home run record. But, that's – I don't think that's going to happen. And the Yankees certainly don't want to wait around for that. You know, he and Teixeira are kind of bringing them down. And, you know, they're not – they're on a little bit of a roll now. They're not quite ready to give up the fight. And if they were to – unload A-Rod or maybe both of those guys, I don't know. I think you could jumpstart them a little bit.
Boy, you know, you look at the Giants, you look at the Yankees, you look at the Red Sox, and Bruce, this is the time of year you and I love. I think, you know, we got the trading deadline coming up. You got rumors are every single day. Next thing they're going to trade Donald Trump. It'll come up. It'll be in the rumor mill.
I hope so. Right? Some place where he can't be seen.
No, I didn't mean to start that. But
no.
But this is some time of year, isn't it? Because, you know, this is when the real stories of baseball start.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch the Red Sox. You know, they were probably destined to, you know, have a great hitting year and fade in the end, but they picked up some pitching. And to me, the real story now, as we look ahead to these final days before the non-waiver trading deadline, is what the Dodgers are going to do. Because they, you know, without Kershaw, that's a dire and desperate situation. Urias pitched a great game. They only let him pitch four innings, but he pitched a great game in Washington. Now he disappears. They sent him down. So they, you know, they need to make up some ground here, and it's going to be tough, really tough without Kershaw. And you'd hear about Chris Archer going to the Dodgers. That would be a huge move for them. He's a great pitcher and a great kid. He'd be perfect in L.A. So we'll see what happens. And then you got Bobby Evans and Sabian trying to figure out, you know, if they can get into this Andrew Miller or Chapman thing. It sounds like they'd be interested in both, and how much do you give up? So it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, this week's going to be pretty good. August 1st, it ends on August 1st. Looking at some of the Rob Manfred, really, it amazes me the things that he comes up with. And you wrote about it today, and I saw it yesterday. You know, well, the relief pitchers are too dominant. We have to limit the relief pitchers. You can't use them and all that stuff. And I said, well, why don't you just hit better, you know? I mean, honestly, why don't you, instead of swinging from your heels every time, why don't you just try to put the ball in play and try to get something going? But he wants to, you know, get rid of the – he says, that, you know, of course, you know what he said. The end of the game is the most exciting. The relief pitchers are too dominant. We must do something. Please.
Well, it's just, it wasn't his idea. I think actually Buster Olney came up with it, maybe via some fans, but Manfred heard that and he couldn't have given it much thought before saying, hey, that'd be great. I mean, it's baseball. You can do what you want. You can use people when you want. You can't be told that you can only use, you know, a certain amount of relief pitchers. I mean, what's next? You're going to ban the backup third baseman? I mean, you can't do that. And it, you know, to say that a relief pitcher can only face three guys or four guys or whatever it is, it's totally ridiculous. I mean, I was surprised that he reacted so positively to that, because the theory has so many holes in it. More than anything, it's just artificial, which is never what baseball has stood for.
Well, he'll react to anything. That's yeah. The thing. I mean, really, you say, well, what about the ball? Maybe we should make it smaller. How about a golf ball? Well, all right. Well,
hey,
we'll look into that. Yeah, not bad.
In spring training, this was on television, so it wasn't any big puzzle that he said it. He was interviewed by somebody about the shifts, and he goes, yeah, you know, maybe it might be a good idea just to do away with shifts. And then once you start thinking about what that means, you realize how foolish it looks. But, my God.
Well, he's different. This is Hall of Fame weekend. You and I have done this show so many times. We used to do a special hour in just the Hall of Fame. But a couple of things, start because we have tomorrow morning to talk about it as well, a little shorter time. But for Ken Griffey Jr., Bruce, I just started today talking about all the great moments of his career. Harold Bryant called him the last real superstar of baseball. Your thoughts on Ken Griffey Jr.?
Well, he was the perfect ball player. He just was. I don't know if he's, I think Mike Trout's a pretty authentic superstar right now, but there hasn't been anybody quite like Griffey, since his prime. You know, guys had certain aspects of the game where they weren't great, and Griffey was absolutely perfect, and he played with a ton of joy. It was absolutely a delight to watch. He was terrific for the city of Seattle. I mean, they've never had it better than when he was in his prime, and they're beating the Yankees, and he's sliding dramatically across home plate on the Edgar Martinez double, and, you know, I think one time he hit eight homers in eight games.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And you know, I read somewhere that it was his idea to come up with the number 42 universally worn on Jackie to honor Jackie Robinson.
Really? I didn't
know
that. Okay.
Which is a hell of an idea, and it's great when that happens every year. But you know, he was just he was perfection. He was Mantle. He was DiMaggio. And boy, talk about a worthy entry in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and a very positive part of baseball. Now, of course, he left Seattle. And, of course, had the great 95, and that led to Safeco Field. But he didn't like hitting in Safeco, and he sort of forced the trade back to the Reds, and that just never seemed to work. And then he ended up, of all places, with the White Sox.
Yeah, that's for a guy like that, you want him to never leave. You want him to play in one city the rest of his life. But, you know, his dad, you know, had the Cincinnati connection, and so that made a little bit of sense. But near the end, you know, things weren't going too well. He got a little cantankerous with the press, and which is understandable. But you know, so did Mays. I mean, to me, it was the sight of them playing that always matters the most. And no matter what happened near the end, like Mays, he remembered the best days.
Yeah, true Hall of Famer. Now going in with him, Mike Piazza. And of course, you know, we've talked about this for years, and but I picked it up on the internet today, the best OPS plus of catchers in the history of the game, and he's number one offensively. Take Bill Dickey, the whole Johnny Bench, this guy's the best.
Yeah, and therefore has to go in. I mean, to me, I've always looked at guys, judging their Hall of Famers, whether they are at the time as you're watching them. And as he developed into the most amazing off-field power hitter I've ever seen, better than Richie Allen or Cepeda, he had an astounding off-field power stroke. And maybe the ball's reduced, maybe he was a little bit, but all we know is what happened in the games, and it takes a real art to do that, no matter what you're putting in your body. And he became the greatest hitting catcher, the greatest power hitting catcher of all time. So he's just straight in, you know, all for a guy who was drafted in the 62nd round, which doesn't even exist now. Tommy Lasorda has been saying this week that, you know, the Dodgers really actively didn't want him, and they resented the hell out of Lasorda because he was friends with Piazza's dad.
Right.
You know, but Vince, Piazza, and Lasorda were right. The kid had a batting cage in his backyard, and he must have worked really hard because he was kind of a pudgy, kind of nothing kid who developed into this phenomenal hitter.
Wow.
And a good catcher, an underrated catcher, I think.
Yeah, you know, look, you have to have the ability to see a ball and hit a ball and hit it with power. You know, you can enhance it as much as you want, but you still have to have that ability. And he had it. You cannot take that away from the guy. He had it. He really did. Better than anyone who's ever been a catcher offensively. You know, the story, I may have mentioned it before, with Lasorda, you know, they did draft Piazza as a favorite of Lasorda in the 62nd round or something.
Yeah.
And they brought him into to Dodger Stadium and worked him out at shortstop. And he couldn't play. He was awful. Yeah. And they didn't want to sign him. And Lasorda said, sign him. And they said, well, he just can't do much. And Lasorda said, look, if he was a catcher, would you sign him? And they said, all right, we would. And Lasorda said, okay, he's a catcher.
That's just amazing.
And that's
it?
How he became a catcher.
Jeez. it really is one of the great baseball stories ever told. I mean, it's a guy, a kid from Philly, really, who has no future in the game, really. And only a couple people think he do, including Mike, and he develops into that. So,
yeah, Lasorda told me that story, so it must be true.
Yeah.
All right. Did you look up anything about Graham McNamee?
I did.
Did you see the story online?
Well, I saw a couple things that it's just as I read this, it's amazing to me that he wasn't one of the first guys in, if not the first guy in.
Right.
I mean, because he basically invented the art of radio play-by-play. He was the guy in the early 20s in New York, you know, calling games with some flair, with some color. How's the weather? What are the fans doing? What's this guy? You know, what's wrong with this guy? Or, you know, stuff like that. I mean, he was the first to do that, and it wasn't a fluke. I mean, he called other sports. He called the Dempsey-Tunney fight, the long count. He was on radio, just in variety shows with celebrities of the day. He was a real debonair, good-looking guy. I mean, he was the guy. He was the pioneer. I'm surprised it took so long to get around to him.
Yeah, very good. Good analysis of that. There is a good article online, and it's the same one that's reproduced in the Hall of Fame book. But your dear friend Jim Murray, I thought, had the best lines about him. And he wrote in 1978 that McNamee was a great announcer because he never let the action on the field get in the way of his imagination. He called the game as it should be. If he forgot the score, he described the sunset. Ring Lardner said sitting next to McNamee was like having a doubleheader. The game you were watching and the game you were hearing.
Oh, God, that's great.
Isn't it?
And who knew? You know, yeah, they were all great games when he broadcast them.
It didn't matter.
I love it.
Yeah, that's Graham McNamee. He is honored tomorrow with the Fort C. Frick Award. Bruce, have a great afternoon, and we'll be on early tomorrow. We'll look forward to talking to you.
I'll have the coffee ready. Thanks, Marty.
All right, that's Bruce Jenkins. More coming up. KMBR 680, the Sports Leader.